Welcome to Season 7, Episode 29 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, 15th of October, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat doofer on the website and in the #UUPCIRC channel. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Laura.
Hello!
Hello, how are you?
All right.
Are you in control of the deck?
Absolutely.
Brilliant. And Tony, hello.
Hi, Alan, how are you doing?
Tickety-boo, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Looking forward to this.
It's kind of chilled.
Yeah, there's no Mark, is there, this week?
No, no Mark this week.
He is on a beach in a...
Is he really?
In a Speedo.
Do we pay him enough to be on holiday?
How much do you get paid for doing this? I'm just ask out of personal curiosity.
Oh, this is awkward. What do we tell him, Laura?
Not sure.
Oh, dear. Things change while you were away, Tony.
Yeah, we got sponsorship.
We didn't tell you about this, but yeah.
Is that how you've got a new sofa?
Yeah. I decided I'd rather sit on that rather than my iPhone.
Fair enough.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well done.
Callback.
Oh, yeah, the bendy iPhones.
Oh, dear me. Yeah. So we're doing news and stuff and... community stuff. We're probably not going to mention the upcoming event on camp because that's past now. We confused a few listeners in the previous episode by mixing future tense and past tense about on camp in one episode.
We confused ourselves, let's face it.
Well, we do that every week, really, don't we?
It's timey-wimey, confused.
Oh, dear. Should we get on with it?
Yeah, go on then.
All right.
It's time for the news, and Red Hat developer Leonard Pottering has published a rant in which he criticises the open source community for being full of not very nice people. He gives examples of hate sites that have been set up about him, even an assassination attempt.
An assassination attempt?
Well, it was a Bitcoin fundraiser, like a Kickstarter for death.
Well,
a Bitcoin fundraiser to get money to hire somebody to kill him.
It was one line in an IRC channel. Someone saying we should raise money to hire a hitman using Bitcoin, which I do not condone.
Yeah,
not very nice.
No, that's not a nice and pleasant way to engage with developers and community members.
No,
I agree. So this is interesting, and it was kind of eye opening to see because I think a lot of people had a similar reaction when they saw this. Wait, what? Leonard is having a go at everyone else. It seemed a little bit strange that.
Why do you say that?
Well, some people have been on the receiving end of Leonard's rants in the past, and some would argue that actually Leonard is the source of some of the problems in the Linux community. And he addresses that in his post and says, in the past, I'm an old man now, and when I was younger, I was a bit of an idiot, and now I'm all grown up, I don't do that anymore, kind of thing.
I've got sympathy with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case for, many people.
Everybody.
When you think back to... activities you did when you were younger and get embarrassed and regretful.
Cheers.
No, I'm talking about you, Tony, not me.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking in the first person. It's an interesting read, and he turned off comments on it, rightfully so, because it would have just turned into a hate fest, I'm sure.
Surely the point is that nobody should have to put up with these sort of things.
Well, exactly. And the internet does tend to bring out the worst in everyone, really, including people who would normally give reasoned arguments why they dislike a particular piece of software, or reasoned argument why they don't want to use a particular desktop or component or something. But there's something about the internet that brings out the worst in people who ordinarily you could have a beer and a chat with in meet space and not have a problem with it. It's baffling, especially it's not even that they're anonymous, a lot of these people. They are people you know and people you may even have met. And, there's this special, glass screen of the internet between them and everyone else, and they're able to hide, behind it. It's bizarre.
I think he did have a point about the fact that if other people do it, then you sort of... that becomes part of the culture and you're more likely to do it, because I've seen that happen in real life as well.
Right. And he has a point. I mean, he raises the issue of Linus Torvalds and his, should we call it management style? Sorry, nearly spilt your tea there. And that's been addressed before. Sarah, I think the Intel developer who raised this issue that we've talked about in the past about Linus's style. And it was also raised recently at DebConf when I think it was Ian Jackson asked Linus a question about you know, the way that he deals with people and how it's not productive and not, you know, not conducive to a good working atmosphere. But, you know, Linus has his reasons for that. You know, whether the world can continue allowing that to happen, given he is the, you know, dictator for life of Linux, basically.
Is it too much to expect people just to be nice to each other?
Well, some people just don't feel that they have to and don't feel that they should. You know, there's some people who don't feel that code of conduct or, you know, codifying behavior patterns within open source communities is the right way to do it. They feel that, you know, if they think you're being, you know, a bleep, then they should be able to tell you that you're being a bleep, and they're expressing themselves, and they should be allowed to express themselves, and you're repressing me, stop repressing me, you know.
So the answer is yes, it is too much to expect people just to be nice to
each
other.
It is too much to expect everyone to behave in exactly the same way, yes, unless you live in North Korea or China, you know, basically. No?
See, it's a freedom of speech thing to be able to say to somebody, we're going to get a campaign together to kill you.
Well, I think there is, you know, there are degrees. You know, there's reasoned discussion, and, you know, I think it's reasonable for someone to call Linus out for, you know, his behaviour. I think that's perfectly reasonable. No, I don't think it's reasonable for people to set up hate websites about an individual person based on the work that they do, the software that they've given the world. No, I don't think that's reasonable. But yeah, I think it's okay for people to have free speech, of course, but...
Yeah, there's a difference between if somebody's being a real idiot and telling them they're an idiot. And there are all good and bad ways of doing that.
Of course.
But there's a difference between that and then threatening their livelihood, their family, their life.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about this before with, you know, the Gamergate stuff.
Yeah, we lost a listener over that.
Yes. Never mind.
Yeah.
Moving on. Adobe's ebook software, the catchily titled Digital Editions, has been criticized for not only breaching user privacy, but doing so in a really insecure way. According to the EFF, the software tracks every document readers add to their local library and tracks what happens with those files and then sends those logs back to the mothership over the internet in the clear. Well, as I've said before, you know, it doesn't bother me because I don't read any books.
Oh, yeah.
Well, although, you know, there are PDFs that I might open that I might be thinking about it. I might not want corporation to know that I've opened.
Do you have Adobe's ebook software, the catchily entitled Digital Editions?
I happen to not have it installed, no, so I am unaffected by this issue. But if I walked up to someone else's machine, say, for example, if I was in a... in a cafe using a kiosk computer, they may well have the default application opening PDF files to be one of these insecure, dangerous pieces of nefarious monitoring software. And I might not know that until I click the open this PDF button and the file opens.
And one of the things it says in the article is it's not just the specific books. It's actually supposedly, and I think Adobe rejects this, but they say that it's scanning all your library.
So, oh, right. So whether you open them or not, well, the fact that I may have downloaded a Lockpicker's Guide PDF and the, you know, the Terrorist Guide to Making Bombs or something.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the implication. I think Adobe said that isn't the case, but the article was saying that, yeah, I mean, it's just scanning everything. So if you've self-published, presumably meaning you don't have DRM on it, and that's been scanned as well.
Yeah, so it's another... example of the downside of ebooks over good old-fashioned paper books.
Well, yeah, I guess. I guess it depends. I mean, it's always way before ebooks ever came about. It was, you know, well thought that security services, you know, would monitor for patterns in book purchasing and book borrowing from libraries.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, certain patterns of, you know, anarchic behavior plus weaponizing, you know, penguins or whatever, and plus this book and that book equals almost certainly, you know, a bomber of some kind. Yeah, I this is like wild speculation, but it was always thought, well before ebooks came about, that was going on.
Crime novels were based on being able to search people's patterns of reading in the library.
Oh, really? Crime novels as in books?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
It's a bit confusing.
Yeah, so is the easy way to just set up a firewall rule that doesn't ever talk to Adobe servers? Is that the quick and dirty fix?
That's the easy way, is it?
Well, an easy way for those of us who like reading strange books. I don't know. Just a guess.
Okay.
Moving on.
And NVIDIA users can sleep more soundly in their beds with the news that they will support both Mr. and Mir and Wayland in future.
Yeah, there was a big brouhaha, you know, when the whole Wayland and Mir controversy kicked off a year or two ago. Has it been that long? That you'll never get buy-in from the big GPU vendors. They'll never write drivers for you. Ha! And you know, it's good to see that actually, if we just keep plugging away and writing this software, that you know these manufacturers of proprietary products might just make their drivers for our software. Quite cool.
They haven't released anything yet, though, have they?
No, this is like forward planning and letting everyone know what they're assigning developers to work on over the coming months and years. And I think it's good that gives confidence to both Wayland and Mir camps. To be able to say, okay, well, if they're going to be, creating drivers for our platform, then, that gives us some confidence that we're going in the right direction. Because, if companies like NVIDIA said, no, we don't think this is worth doing, let's stick with Xorg, then that's a bit of a problem. And, there may be rethinks required for architectural decisions that have been made in Wayland a bit, but that seems to be not the case. It seems everything's okay, and look forward to new drivers from them.
Is it the same for AMD as well?
Not sure. I think AMD are making changes to the way they architect their driver. I think they're doing some like open source platform bottom foundation. That's the word, and then build upon that with either an open source driver or a proprietary driver.
You heard it here first, folks. AMD's open source bottom.
Well, indeed. Yes.
Excellent. The CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, rocked up to the Grace Hopper celebration of women in computing on Thursday and told the largely female audience that they shouldn't ask for a raise in order to address the female-male pay gap.
Mm.
Good work, that man.
Yeah, he went down really well with the crowd, apparently.
Yeah, I think his logic was that you just have to trust in the system. And although it seems unfair in the short term, in the long term, it all works out. And the reason is that women who don't ask for a rise are perceived better. And therefore, in the long term, they'll be rewarded for it.
You good subservient woman. You guys. Yeah, you keep quiet. You'll get your reward.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Whereas the culture for men presumably therefore is to negotiate reasonably aggressively on pay and get some reward as a result of it.
Though there is a point in the thing about not wanting to ask, because there's another article that was in the related articles about the fact that women tend to get perceived as being aggressive where men will be perceived as assertive and all that kind of thing, but that still doesn't lead to his conclusion. Logically.
Was that the whole stop using the word bossy campaign?
That sort of thing.
Kind of thing, right. Hmm. Yeah, he later retracted this on Twitter, I believe.
In a letter.
Right. Sign writing in the sky with a plane. Right, much. Okay.
Yeah. Not yes, for possibly a social faux pas.
He picked
committed.
A really good location for it in order to maximise the impact.
It was a question from somebody on stage with him at the time asking sort of for a tip or something, and that was his answer.
Right, with a predominantly female audience.
Yeah.
Good work, that man.
Mm.
I think he was trying to be positive.
Right, but no one can quite figure out logically how that works.
Yeah.
Awesome, good work. In other news, Chrome OS had dropped support for the venerable EXT family of file systems.
Ooh.
not too big a problem until you consider that people who might want to use external media formatted in those EXD file systems with a Chromebook.
Yeah.
This was like a change that was made that someone spotted. This is the benefit of doing things in the open. When you do things in the open, people have...
Spot your foolish errors.
Yes, they have RSS feeds following your bug trackers and things. And, you know, they subscribe to bug email and say, hey, look, that changed and I don't think it should have changed in that way. And then you can mobilize the internet army and get it fixed, and they've changed their mind.
That's the problem. People aren't focusing on the right thing, so they're bored and twiddling their thumbs and issuing death threats instead.
Right.
We need to get them more RSS feeds of bug reports.
Yes, of bug reports and merge proposals and Git pull requests.
And do something useful. Find open SSL problems.
Well, yes.
There's enough of those to find, apparently. But yes, it was... interesting, they decided to drop it because they didn't think anybody was using it anymore, pretty much.
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with them because I can't remember ever attaching a drive and thinking it was a good idea to have it formatted EXT, other than when I was having to do some elaborate recovery scheme of pulling a drive out of another machine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I realize it's a useful... file system, very useful, and allows you to have all the security semantics of a Linux file system, which you don't get on FAT and NTFS. Yeah. So, you know, there are certainly benefits to having EXT 2 and 3 and 4 and file size, you know, issues and all that, and fragmentation and all that kind of nonsense.
Apart from that, what has EXT ever done
for us?
Yeah. Moving on.
So, I was just halfway through that thought.
Oh, okay.
So, obviously, USB sticks and things tend to be FAT formatted, but if you've got an external hard disk drive that's anything over a couple of gig in size, you're probably going to have it formatted using a proper quote-unquote file system.
And typically a Chromebook, which doesn't have a lot of local storage, you might well do that.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, if you've got an external hard drive that's full of all your photos or something, you might do that, but then you kind of detract from the whole point of having a Chromebook, that you throw everything in the cloud.
In the crowd.
Crowd. Mm. Okay. You may now move on.
Thanks, mate. It's your turn.
A Kickstarter for a project called Anonobox has been pledged over 70 times its target. By plugging your device into the box, all traffic is automatically routed over Tor, the onion router.
Or router, as our friends over the pond say. So this is a tiny, tiny little box that just has three connectors, a USB mini power connector and two Ethernet jacks. One goes to your router and one goes to the rest of your network. The idea being that it sits in between you and the internet and routes all your traffic through Tor.
I think you can get, as a reward for $45 backing the Kickstarter campaign, you can get one.
Right.
I think less than that, you get stickers.
Okay. How does Tor work?
I don't know, but as I understand it, it's like layers of an onion. It makes you cry when you use the internet.
So you can't see anything, and therefore...
Well, no, basically, the content goes in, and the request that you send to the internet, so, you know, get... www.google.com. Instead of you going directly to google.com, you bounce through a network of machines and you pop out at a unspecified location.
Like one of those awesome labyrinths with marbles.
Yes, exactly like that. And you pop up on a Tor exit node, as they're called.
I've heard of those.
And then from there, go to your destination, Google, and then your response comes back the other way through the onion router. And
router.
Let's call the whole thing off. And then the idea being it anonymizes the internet. And this is very popular in places where there is internet filtering and where there is internet monitoring by unstable governments and unsavory governments. And journalists like to use it as well. So it looks like quite a neat idea as a plug and play how to get anonymity. It's had a bit of criticism, though. Yeah, because someone noted that the prototypes that they've shown in the Kickstarter campaign can easily be bought already on popular Chinese eBay like Alibaba.
Oh, right.
Yeah, okay. For much less than the $45 that you'd have to back to get this thing.
More like $20.
Yeah, nearer $20. So some people are, you know, crying foul that this thing is actually... not all it's cracked up to be, but the guy who created the Anonybox Kickstarter campaign did a Reddit AMA where he tried to dispel some of these myths, but not enough for some people. So this story seems to be running and running, and possibly by the time you listen to this, if you're not listening live, either the Kickstarter campaign will be pulled or it will carry on and there will be more or less clarity. We don't quite know yet, but it's certainly worth watching.
Yeah,
it's an interesting project either way.
Yeah, it looks like a really cool little box.
Yeah,
and if you are concerned about privacy, easy to transport with you.
There are some issues with it. Like if you put it on your network, you know, what happens about location-based services that you actually do want to know where you are? Like you wanted to watch iPlayer or Hulu or something like that. How would you use those kind of things? So, but you know, I'm sure all those kind of issues will be ironed out. But keep an eye on that one. Anonybox.
And Google have revealed details of a vulnerability in SSL version 3, which allows attackers to decipher network traffic. Although SSL's old and deprecated, it's still commonly used as a fallback on websites.
I should say SSL version 3 is still old and deprecated. Apologies.
Right. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm. Super. More updates coming out, I guess, and more websites being fixed and changed.
But that one's not specifically about the, like, say, OpenSSL implementation, which is what the other problem was about.
Pass.
I think it's about the protocol, so I'm assuming that means it's in the actual spec that's iffy rather than the code.
Right.
Oh, yes, it's generally just don't use SSL version 3 anymore.
What version?
You can turn it off in version 3. You can turn it off in browser supports, usually in the options somewhere, and website hosters can stop their web server from falling back to version 3 as well.
Right. So the quickie is not, you don't necessarily need to patch anything. You just switch off support for it at either end, and then you're safe because you will never request SSL version 3 and the server will never respond. But that as an
exactly.
Option.
So presumably if it can't negotiate a higher security protocol, it just fails at some point.
Right.
So what should it be using?
Newer version.
Which is?
Newer. And version 3.
Yeah.
So I saw in the article something about TLS, and I know in my email settings it always says /TLS. I don't know what TLS is.
You start to get into things. Sometimes you use one protocol for doing the authentication piece and then another protocol for the tunneling and things.
Okay.
So one for handshaking and one for transferring data. It starts to get a bit more complicated than I can readily explain here.
Or anywhere else, really.
Yeah, true.
And finally, in news, alongside the release of Android 5 Lollipop, Google have announced three new devices. The Nexus 6 from Motorola is a Quad HD. That's a 4K display phone.
In 6 inches, I'm guessing?
In 6 inches. Well done, you. The Nexus 9 is an HTC... Oh, you're ahead of me here. HTC tablet. And the Nexus Player is... there you go. It's made by Asus, and it's running the first release of Android TV as a kind of set-top box, Chromecast-like,
ooh,
Apple TV-like,
ooh,
kind of thing that sits under the telly.
Wonder if it's better than TiVo.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, I think that's all we've got time for in the... What?
I think we have some gaming news.
You sure? You sure we got time for
Very.
Gaming news? Alan, anything? Right, okay. So there is some gaming news. As everybody will be aware already, having listened into this, the Unity 3D games, so games available within Unity 3D, they phone home with details of your hardware and software.
Ooh.
So
for statistical purposes, I guess.
Adobe.
Not like, well, I'm sure Adobe might argue it's for statistical purposes as well. But yes, so Linux seems to be pretty low on the stats, which is 0.1% of Unity 3D games. Mac OS at 4.3% and everything else Windows, so 95-odd%.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, it's only games that are written using Unity 3D, but
still, that
amounts to quite a few games in Steam and quite a few non-Steam games that are written in Unity, because Unity 3D is quite a useful cross-platform game development tool.
And Unity 3D's got nothing to do with Ubuntu Unity Desktop.
Correctamundo, and nothing to do with the VMware Unity
mod.
Right, yeah, exactly.
The good news is, of the small number of Linux users. Ubuntu has 61% of them, so we're doing quite well in that regard.
Yes, we have a huge percentage of the tiny percentage of the market. Yes, well done us.
That's about right, yes.
Yes, that's the end of the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you. So go on, do your duty, keep calm, and compose an email.
And now it's time for some community news. The nominations are open for two positions on the Ubuntu IRC Council.
Mm. Yeah, so what do you have to do if you're on the Ubuntu IRC Council?
So the #Ubuntu IRC channel and lots of other IRC channels like #Kubuntu, Lubuntu and loads of others are moderated by a team of moderators who spend their time helping to keep the channels clear of chatter and silliness and focused on support and for other channels that are not support channels, focused on whatever the topic of the day is there. And sometimes, there are policy changes, rule changes that need to be made and decisions about how we manage those channels. And sometimes people get banned and you need to escalate or appeal that ban if you think it was unwarranted. And this is where the IRC Council comes in. They help mediate those kind of problems, and they also do forward planning of how IRC channels are going to be managed, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, anything related to the use of the #Ubuntu-anything IRC channels is dealt with by the IRC Council.
There was a time a few years ago when the IRC Council was sort of formed because there were lots of issues with the IRC channels and behaviour in them. Is that still the case?
So I remember some of the very first conversations about setting up the IRC Council way back, way, way, way back. I think actually it was at my very first UDS in Seville back in 2007 or something. And, we figured out that you don't just need a level of operators who can, kick people when they're being silly and make up arbitrary rules for what's good and what's bad in a channel. You also need a level of escalation so that you can say, well, this person kicked me, this other person is a friend of theirs, I don't trust them to be able to arbitrate between me and them, because these are all a close-knit bunch of friends. So let's have a council who can arbitrate those kind of issues. And it happens surprisingly often. And there are also, some people who just spend way too much of their life trolling IRC channels, the people who've been doing it for years and years and keep coming back to the Freenode IRC channels. It's unfathomable, but you see, there's some people who seem to make it their life's work. So, yeah, you too could be on the IRC Council and help deal with these lunatics.
And it's apparently a lot of fun and really rewarding, and it goes on your CV.
Awesome.
Yeah, interestingly, it's Alan Bell, who's one of the two people who've stepped down in the last couple of years from the IRC Channel, hence creating these vacancies.
Mm.
So Alan's a friend of the show, I believe.
Yes,
I believe. Well, I believe he would describe himself as a friend of the show.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
He's been on the show.
He has been a guest presenter in the past.
So
yeah.
All the details are on the Fridge. If you go to fridge.ubuntu.com, you can see the details about what the qualifying requirements are to be in the IRC Council.
Cool. Okay, and Will Cook, the new desktop team manager at Canonical, has written a blog post about Unity 8.
Yes, which has bizarrely been posted on Michael Hall's blog. I think that was just to get it out to wider adoption, because I don't think Will's blog is on Planet Ubuntu, so he wanted to get wider adoption, wider like viewership of this article. It's about the future of the desktop and apps on the desktop.
So what version of Ubuntu, Unity are we on at the moment?
So it's Unity 7 in 14.04 and 14.10.
Okay.
And Unity 8 is what's on the phone. And Unity 8 will come to the desktop in the
That's hand wavy
future. Yeah, that's the convergence one, the new one.
There's a preview available now for the desktop, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Unity Next ISO, which you can download and boot off of a USB stick so as not to damage your install, and lets you see what Unity 8 looks like. It's not finished. It's a preview, you know. Some people have been pointing out that, you know, certain design elements don't look right on the desktop. You're absolutely right, because the design team haven't spent a huge amount of time focused on Unity 8 on the desktop. They've mostly been focused on the phone and tablet at the moment. But that's what's coming in this next two cycles between now and 2016.
So there are some new things in the Ubuntu desktop that Unity 8 will introduce. One of them is application isolation.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about that, please.
So application isolation is done with AppArmor, and it enables you to install an application and be sure that that app can't stomp all over the data for another app. So it's so that, you know, on the phone we use it already, so that an app that you install can't go and read your contacts or make phone calls or go and get all of your photos and upload them to a nefarious place or anything like that. And that's what we're going to put on the desktop. The traditional Unix desktop hasn't been like that. You know, you install a program, it has carte blanche over any file that you have permissions over.
It runs as you.
As
it?
You, yeah. Exactly.
Than, yeah.
Yeah, whereas this runs as you, but in a confined silo, with only a limited set of permissions, like, you know, can it connect to the network? Can it play audio? Can it go and find out your location from the GPS? You know, that kind of stuff.
So when you install an app on your Android or iPhone, it asks if you want to give the application those sort of permissions. So it's a similar...
Well, it does on Android. It doesn't on iPhone.
Does it not? Oh, okay. No. I don't use an iPhone. So it's a similar metaphor for the desktop then?
No. So Click packages don't smack you in the face when you first install them like they do on Android. What Click packages do is there's a manifest that determines what policy it needs. So it needs to connect to the network, for example, or needs location. But at the point when it tries to do something like go and get your location, you'll get a pop-up. So, and you can deny it. So you could install a map application, but actually not let it find out where you are. So you could just use it as a map.
And I think, and while that could be a bit annoying at the beginning when you've got a fresh install, I can see how it's a lot easier to understand what these permissions are that you're agreeing to or not. Because on Android, it really annoys me that they present you with them at the beginning and you either say, yes I'll
to
have
everything,
them all, or
no.
Or
you don't get the app.
And you're already halfway through installing it because you want that app.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly one of the motivations behind it, is to make it granular so that you can, you know, individually say, well, yeah, I want that mapping application to be able to get to the internet so it can download the tiles for the map. But no, I don't want it to know my location because all I want to do is look at the map. I don't want it to know where I am. Mm. And that's a reasonable... And so those are the kinds of things that confinement gives us and you'll get in later versions of Unity 8, but that's over the next year or so.
Sounds very cool. And finally, what have we got?
The Ubuntu forums have launched a forum for people to talk about other OSs and distributions.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so if you want to talk about Red Hat, you can go to the Ubuntu forums.
Sweet.
Or even Windows. There's an option for that as well.
Excellent.
I think they had originally, a while ago, had some of these forums as well, but they closed them down due to lack of time to moderate them.
I can't imagine why they would need to moderate those.
So somebody's clearly got some time on their hands and has stepped up and is going to moderate them.
Sweet. No events. End of the community news. That's all for episode 29. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing stuff and things.
Yes.
Yeah.
About Mark's blog post.
Yeah. About OgCamp.
Yes.
Yes.
A retrospective of OgCamp and some of the things that were brought up about OgCamp.
You can tell we've planned this and we really do know.
Yeah.
We're not going to make it up as we go along at all.
No. Well, if you're listening live, stay tuned and you'll find out. Maybe we'll replace it with an interview in the show that goes out.
Yeah, like last time.
Yeah.
Can't
Thanks
be
for
that
listening.
Bad. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.